Right now it is time, finally, for our good friends from the Lakeville Journal to join us, tricornernews.com. And on your newsstands, we have Janet Manco. Good morning, Janet.
Good morning.
And we have none other than Cynthia Hostmender. Good morning, Cynthia.
Good morning.
Sorry about hanging up on that one thing.
Masquerading is Ann Day.
There's a certain combination that I have to do, and every once in a while, I mix them up.
Everyone who knows you knows that sometimes sequencing is not your best sport.
It's not the best sport at all, no.
Hey, it's hard.
All right, let's go to the pages of the Lakeville Journal, and right up front, there's a couple of stories. First of all, a great picture, honoring and remembering, despite the quarantine, the veterans in the various towns all did services that some people could go to. And in New York and in Massachusetts, some states even had the wave parades go by.
I was surprised we didn't have more car parades because people are doing so many of them. And so off in so many of our towns, the car parade is such a big part of the Memorial Day ceremony. But we did not have car parades. We did, however, first of all, we have more photos on page A3 and a little text. But if you go online, we have many more photos and a much longer.
Cynthia?
Uh-oh. What?
Cynthia?
Lucy?
She's still there.
I'm here.
Yeah.
You hear me?
We couldn't hear you for
a
second.
We got to much longer. Much longer, and then you went away.
Oh, okay. Well, so we have a much longer text description in at www.tricornernews.com. But the towns of Kent and Salisbury did not do any ceremonies. But those are also the two towns, I think, that have been hit the hardest with people coming to town and really not observing social distancing at the recreation sites. And I think they were a little more nervous about it. So, for instance, Kent has had an overflow of people going to Bulls Bridge and Kent Falls, which is now closed. And in Salisbury, as I was driving someplace over the weekend, I think there must have been 35 cars parked around the edges of the Great Falls as people scrambling down there or hiking up and down the roads. And then I heard from Brian Oler that there were 110 cars parked at one point at the Undermountain Trailhead in Salisbury.
Oh, that's a big problem. And where I live, going up on Mount Riga, from Friday afternoon through Saturday, you would think it was a major thoroughfare. There's that much traffic of people going up on Mount Riga as well.
On dirt roads. Yeah. Very narrow, with a big drop-off to one side.
We're all having that, I think.
What?
I said we're all having that experience.
Yeah. So, it's not even as though we can say, well, everybody who's listening to and reading the Lakeville Journal should avoid those public spots. It's a lot of people from out of town also. But if you are local, keep in mind that there are lots of different places to go hiking. It's much better to sort of spread it out and not be going to those most popular spots. But back to Memorial Day, as we were talking about, the towns of Cornwall, North Canaan, Falls Village, and Sharon did have ceremonies of different types. And so we described them in the paper. We have some beautiful photos. I went out on Monday morning with the honor guard from Couch Pippa VFW. And
place
that was
flags,
a very interesting, very moving experience, and really did not rush through it at every single cemetery and burial site that they went to. They really took the time to play taps, to do the invocation, to do the gun salute, and stopped at GEAR, both at Nursing and Rehabilitation and at GEAR Village, and people were able to watch from the windows as the ceremonies were held.
I went one year to see the flags placed on the graves of veterans by veterans, and it is not a quick thing at all, and it is a very emotional thing, even just to stand there and watch it. Really is.
Very moving.
All right. We spoke with the CEO of Sharon Hospital mentioning this, but you've got a full story on this in the paper about antibody tests are now available at Sharon Hospital.
Somebody had actually mentioned to me casually in conversation that he had been at the emergency room at Sharon Hospital, and the emergency room doctor said, well, we have the antibody test here now, which they've been very quiet about it. And when you read Deborah Alexinas' article about these new tests and her interview with Dr. Herko, he's very ambivalent about them and about what people interpret as the power of the tests. And he's sort of saying, even so, we already know that the COVID-19 test is not foolproof, and that there's, I think there's something like a 40%.
50, if 50%. The best rate they get is 50-50 shot right now.
Right. So you get, there's it's very possible. And I know that most of the people that I know who have taken the test have said, well, I'm sure I had it, and it came up negative. So, you know, what can you say? But the antibody test, what people want to know is, do they have immunity? And, of course, there's the program at Sharon Hospital for the blood plasma program, because the thinking is if you have immunity that you can help strengthen up somebody who is at risk. But Dr. Hooker, I would say, is kind of not super encouraging everybody in saying, like, run right over and get the antibody test, see if you have immunity. There's a lot of questions that remain. And, you know, this is a new disease, and we don't really know how it's going
to
behave.
So. Yeah, what he said to us was, you know, go to your doctor first. If your doctor recommends it, then do it. But once again, the test is, you know, flu shots are not 100%, but this is even far, far, far less effective than flu shots. But if it makes you feel better and your doctor lets you do it,
then that's a different story.
More power to it. Yeah. If it eases your mind. Big story that I posted, and boy, I got roasted by some and toasted by some. The court ruling that gives towns the power over racetracks over Lime Rock.
This has been a multi-year conversation, really, that started in 1959 when the track first opened officially as a track, as opposed to sort of a place where guys would go and just race their cars around. And Skip Barber, who's in his 80s, is, you know, I think looking to maybe sell the track and would like to lock in the possibility of having Sunday racing. And he's been trying to negotiate with the citizens in the area to find a happy medium. And I would say that has not really worked out. And so there's been a lot of court cases back and forth. And the state Supreme Court has now stepped in. And I believe that this means it's the final. Like, once the Supreme Court rules, that's it. And there's many different parties involved in this. Patrick is going to give a much longer look at this in our June 4th issue. He gives a short summary of it, and essentially what he says is the Salisbury Planning and Zoning Commission, whether or not they choose to continue in perpetuity the decision to ban Sunday racing, was really looking to the state to say, it's up to us as the Planning and Zoning Commission to have the right to decide this. It's not up to the state. It's an issue that's within our town. And so that's what was basically affirmed. So for now, there is no more Sunday racing. There's still no Sunday racing. We have the full 22-page court decision on our website at tricornernews.com. And then Patrick will be talking to all the many different interest groups that are involved in this for his longer issue next week.
That's funny when you mentioned the court case, because somebody called me and asked me if I could email it to them, and I emailed it to them, and they said, my God. I said, well, you wanted it. That's the full decision.
Yeah, and 22 pages isn't that bad.
Well, no, but for a normal person who's used to seeing court decisions not like that, it really is. There's a lot.
In a sum, yeah. You can usually read the beginning and the end and figure it out.
All right. Distance learning, a story by Patrick Sullivan as well.
Right, and so the question is, as the school year is coming to an end, how has that worked out? And I think the answer, as with everything, has been, like, you know, it works for some people and it doesn't work for other people. A lot of kids have had to either go to a neighbor's house or go to some other public spot to get internet so they can do their homework. And, of course, this leads to the longer ongoing conversation about high-speed internet and cell phone use here and the need for broadband and faster internet speeds, which I think is not resolved, and which some people still object to.
Yeah, I just wish the state of Connecticut, because it's given up really, would demand that cable companies demand, in today's age, it doesn't matter if there's two people on that road, wire it. You're making billions of dollars.
They've certainly demanded it in other parts of the state. It's just that where we are in this rural area, that's not what most people make demands about,
because some people really don't want it, which is one of the ironies of life in the Northwest Corner. Same with the cell phone service. But also the regulatory agency that oversees them, PURA, they are required to give cable access to everybody. They're just, you know, I think it is expensive for them. But one of the interesting things about the rental boom that we're having right now with a lot of New Yorkers up here and doing work from home is it is expensive to wire your road. But for a lot of these people, it's worth the money, and I think a lot of houses are now going to be wired that hadn't been wired previously.
All right. Hotchkiss Library, because they cannot do their event this year, they're doing weekly events that you can do with authors, and the first one is great. It's all about bread.
So people may know that I've been obsessively testing out ways to make sourdough starter and bake your own bread, because so many people had emailed me and said, well, you can't get yeast anymore and you can't get flour. So what I've learned, first of all, is that to make your own sourdough starter requires an immense amount of flour. To make your own sourdough starter, which is like yeast, requires an immense amount of flour. And it's not that easy, and especially with the humidity right now, it's been a little up and down. But so I got an opportunity to interview Dan Leader and ask him some questions about making sourdough starter and making bread. And Dan Leader is the founder and baker from Bread Alone, which makes the wonderful bread that's sold at many grocery stores around here. And they're also the four cafes, which are now doing takeout only and are not doing seating. But so he has a beautiful new book called Living Bread. It's primarily European breads, but nice profiles of all the bakers. And if you're a big baking fanatic, it's definitely the next step beyond the kind of simpler, more primitive artisan bread that many of us are making. It's a really beautiful book. So he'll be doing Sourdough Starter 101 on Friday night tomorrow from 7 to 8:30 p.m. If you go to the Hotchkiss Library of Sharon website, you can sign up for the Zoom. It's $25 just for the Zoom, but you can also get a copy of the book signed for $75. And some nice hints and tips from him in this interview that we did.
And on the front page, you have the story about the field hospital coming down. There was a variety of reasons. One of them, the president wanted to take these field tents down because in 2 days after the tents were taken down, certain monetary benefits would have been available to the National Guards in the states that set up these field hospitals. But it's stored away at Sharon Hospital.
It's owned by the State Department of Public Health, I believe, and the militia, interestingly, had already trained to set these field hospitals up several months ago. Some visionary leader in the militia said, you know, there's a lot, these guys are doing mostly ceremonial stuff. I think they'd like to have to be able to do more, and so they had trained putting up these field hospitals, and boy, did that come in handy, even though, not quite happy to say, nobody actually needed to be treated in those field hospitals. The rush was not as bad as it could have been or as might have been expected. So presumably that will come back in, you know, October if there is a surge, as is expected, of COVID-19 to come back. But for now it's gone. And, of course, the parking lot in the front has been completely empty and has been blocked off. You're expected to enter through the back, through the tent. But the hospital is opening up a little bit more and offering elective surgery again. So maybe possible that we'll need some more of those parking spaces too.
All right, and we had the National Guard here yesterday dropping off masks, both the Army National Guard and the Air National Guard. What a great bunch I call them kids, but of adults, just really, really great and committed to what they do. So,
you've
got a great story about all the locals, people coming back to the area.
Thank you for saying that. We worked so hard on the story, and we're so pleased with it. And then, of course, COVID-19 happened, and we couldn't run it. So we had noticed that there were a lot of young people in their 20s and 30s who were coming back to the northwest corner. And some of them were living with their parents. Many of them had got their own apartments, their own houses even. Some of them had married and settled down. And so we had some young people who were working with us do interviews with them. And Willie Young, of course, who had been writing for us last year while he was in the off-season from pro baseball, had written his own profile. And Sarah Coco, who, of course, Janet and I have known since she was literally a baby. Will Parati was interviewed by Sam Foley. Sarah was interviewed by Kaylin Hester, who is a Norfolk resident. Sam talked to Renee Boardman. And then we have four other young people who are on our issue next week. But they talked about why they came back, what they found out in the larger world, often in New York or whatever, that made them feel like, you know what, actually there's a lot to be said for life in a rural area, and kind of what they're doing, how they're finding work. And this is, of course, an odd moment in the northwest corner when many adult children have come back to live with their parents during the pandemic, the quarantine. So it's too bad that these young people can't all get together and meet each other because, of course, of social distancing. But maybe as we open up and restaurants open a little bit, maybe there's a way for all these young people to meet each other.
The reason I like the story is I had a decision to make 7 years into my radio career, go and work in big cities or go home. I decided to come home to this area. And it's exactly the same reason. Once you're here, believe you me, whoever leaves here and goes away, it's always in the back of their minds, geez, how can I get back home and do this there?
Right. With rents in New York, we're so crazy the last couple of years.
Yeah. You've got a nice picture of Curtis Rand pointing out a tree.
And so, of course, all of our government is set up to be part-time, and pretty much all of our selectmen and most of our legislators have another job that they do in addition to the work of taking care of their communities. And Curtis is a forester, and he teaches forestry at Salisbury School and for the Yale School of Forestry. And, of course, has kept a close eye on the 400-year-old oak trees at the Grove in Salisbury. And people may not realize this, but the Grove is called the Grove because it's a grove of oak trees. So some of those trees are finally coming down. But Curtis is working to get new white oak saplings. I believe they're white oak. Planted on the ground so that we can continue to have that nice coverage there.
All right, I want to go to the opinion page right now. Janet, you have an extensive editorial. Reopening has its benefits and its challenges, and boy, we know that here by reopening the bargain party, Sharon.
That's right. You know, even for essential businesses like media, you know, the radio station has stayed open and so have the newspapers. Or, you know, our offices need to reopen, and all these different locations, the schools, the churches, you know, all these different places have received long lists from the state of requirements that they have to meet in order to reopen safely. And it's comforting because people want to be safe and they want to do the right thing. It's also daunting, you know, I'm sure, for everyone who's in charge of these things to feel as if they're doing it so no one will be endangered. And it's a tough time, but people, of course, are ready for it. So we talk about that and the disconnect with understanding how parents of young children will be able to go back to their jobs in a regular way if schools and childcare are not available. So this that's more than daunting. That's impossible. So we talk about that at length and welcome input on this.
You know, what's interesting is we've decided to keep the offices closed to the public at least through the fall and winter because we want to see what happens because we don't have that many people at work here. So
Do you get a lot of foot traffic or do you?
Yeah, we do. But what we've done now is everybody has coordinated and they can do their programs at their houses and send them to us.
Yeah, we have too. And the way we've been able to do it is production and editorial have been able to work remotely and will continue to do that. But for the finance department and for our delivery department, we've been using the building every single week.
It's interesting how business have to look at it as a business.
You just have to adjust it for your individual tailor. I would say you have to tailor it for your individual circumstances and who you do need to interact with one another.
Right, and you know you get creative, but you see the effects on people if there's too much of a disconnect with their coworkers too. So it's a balancing.
Oh, no question. And I think that is that's the next thing that people are going to have to really examine.
Yeah, and really deal with. Yep. But yeah, we also have a letter from Michael Motion that, boy, read the headline, Hi-Ho, Silver, and Away. And if you recognize that phrase, read on.
Yeah.
And Mark Godburn on Joe Biden getting a lot of media help. Tom Shackman's column, We Are All Lab Rats Now. Just an excellent column. We're so glad to have that from Tom.
And I like the social distancing cartoon by Peter Steiner.
Yes.
And from Turning Back the Pages, have now opened the ice business for the coming season. Your orders solicited. Also, light trucking phone 575, David Doty.
Right. Isn't that just, it takes you right back to that moment. Yeah.
575. That's amazing.
It is.
All right. Now, you also, you have the real estate guide, which is in the paper this week, which after the COVID-19 will get thinner and thinner.
Right. We have 12 pages.
Interesting statistics coming on this percentage. I think it was the rentals are up 367%.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
See, that's a surprise.
And of course, we've got Compass.
We have 2 pages of Compass this week. And Noah Ambry wrote a very interesting story about horror and why we're attracted to horror at times that are very anxious. And in a sense, it's less anxious to watch horror than because you know it's going to resolve, than to to watch or read the news. We have, Karen Lussay just got a new show at the Ober Gallery in Kent, and her last show sold out. Her work is very beautiful. She's a Lakeville artist and very Rothko-like, very soothing, beautiful, light-fused paintings that have a feeling. They're like landscapes, but they feel very abstract.
Yeah, the show is opening up. It starts tomorrow.
Right, and there's going to be, you know, with all of the galleries now, there's going to be limited visiting. But you can also look at the show online. And then Caitlin Lyle has an article about the Movie House, which is continuing to try very hard to figure out programming. So they're doing some documentaries about art, and there's one. And so you go online, you sign up to watch the film, and a certain percentage of the funds goes to the Movie House. And then they have a curator, artist, teacher named Tony Coretta, and Tony is going to be doing art talks about those films. So they've got Leonardo da Vinci coming up June 2nd, and a guy called Don Miller talking about a film about Fernando Botero and his very interesting work. So that's coming up June 9th. And then the Knees Barnes Gallery has some interesting work. They're kind of fun. They're sort of three-dimensional sculptures, but they're made from acorn caps, which is a superabundant recyclable. Even the squirrels don't want the acorn caps. So she makes little artworks out of them and puts them on pins and then arranges them on a board so that the light that and shadow they create is really interesting. So that's coming up. I think that's opening June 6th. And again, you can go and visit the gallery, but you can also see it online. And then as part of my obsessive quest to learn how to make sourdough starter, I went to Clinton Corners, New York, and bought some freshly milled and ground flour. And Janet and I are both about to start baking with it and see how we do. And if you decide you want to go and pick some up from the farm, make sure you call them first because it's very hard to find. And that's Compass.
All right. And well, you know what I found? Some of these galleries have on their Instagram accounts these virtual tours. Mm-hmm. And with the high quality, high definition that's in cameras right now, some of these virtual tours are unbelievable. Now, it doesn't replace going.
Right.
But at least it opens you up to it, and then you can pick your time to go, and actually call ahead to go to the galleries if you want to. So,
right.
The galleries and the Movie House, hopefully they'll be included in phase two in New York, in about 15 to 25 days. We'll have to see how that works as well.
We have a nice little ad in Compass right next to our WHDD Robin Hood radio ad, and it is for the drive-in theater in Amenia. And Dan, I think Caitlin Lyle had a story about. Amenia Drive-In opening?
Yes, that was last week. But yes, they opened last week, and it was covered by NBC News and us. And so, I'm sure they're having a good response to that because people are looking for ways to get out and have some fun.
And they're advising anybody that comes to look over their COVID-19 rules.
Exactly.
So to have everything. All right, guys, well, COVID-19 or not, we'll speak to you guys again next week.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
Thank you.
That is This Week in the Lakeville Journal, tricornernews.com, and at your newsstands as well.